Porchlight Entertainment, Anvil Entertainment, and British Sky Broadcasting present Family Secrets, voiced by Roland Behan. Family Secrets, in which a family hire a young widow to be a nanny to their disturbed son. Starring Angela Jones as Mary Drake, Tim Redwine as Brian Marley, Pamela Bellwood as Linda Marley, Edward Bunker as Douglas Marley, Daniel Matmore as Carl, Kathy Garver as Mrs. Proffer, Kay Ballard as Frances, Michelle Watkins as Melly, Lisa Amsterdam as Claudia Colley. Music by Kirk Hunter, produced by Anne Sharmelow, written and directed by Sally J. Champlin. Voiced by Roland Behan. It is 1910. A car, a Model T Ford, pulls up beside a curbstone marked with the name of Marley. The driver in a long coat and cap descends, walks around the front of the car, and helps a middle-aged lady down from the back seat.
Wait.
He then helps a young lady to step down from the high vehicle.
You are the third governess that we have sent to the Marleys. They have been failures through no fault of their own. But the child is unmanageable.
They gaze at the large house.
You are, quite frankly, my dear, our last hope.
The pair ascend the stone steps to the front door, which is situated next to a wing 3 stories high, with lace curtains at the windows and a pointed slate roof like the turret of a castle. Inside, a striking woman in white lace is pushed into the room in a wheelchair.
Thank you, Carl.
Yes, ma'am.
Good afternoon, ladies. Mrs. Proffer. Mrs. Drake. It's a chilly day. Would you like some tea?
Yes, please. Mrs. Marley, do call me Mary, won't you?
Very well, Mary. One or two sugars?
Two, please.
And Mrs. Proffer?
One. What a magnificent portrait. Is that a depiction of you, Mrs. Marley?
Yes, Mrs. Proffer, it was. Thank you. Mrs. Drake, Mary, your credentials are in order, and I see that you've had some success in treating troubled children. This is very difficult for me.
This is why we're here, Mrs. Marley.
A difficulty with your child is hard to talk about in any circumstance, Mrs. Marley. That you have asked me here means that you are attempting to address the problem.
Brian is my last child. And since he was born, I could no longer... Well. And I've never been able to touch him. Never. There. You have it. He's my fault. But when Brian was young, he did have his Gram, my mother. She was able to be with him like nobody else. She died 3 months ago, and we don't know what to do. My husband is an investment banker.
Yes, we were told.
I cannot accept what my husband wants. Military school would destroy Brian's gentle sensibilities. He is a genius. And I could not sleep If I sent my child away, I'm this is a terrible mess.
May we please meet Brian now?
He's the most beautiful child.
Mrs. Marley composes herself. Mrs. Proffer and Mary glance at each other in anticipation as a butler enters, followed by Brian, wearing a smart tweed suit. His dark hair neatly cut, he bows and looks coolly at his mother.
This is Mrs. Proffer and Mrs. Drake. Please say hello.
Hello.
Hello, Brian.
He backs away.
Brian, please do not do this now. Mrs. Drake is going to be your new governess.
Is she smart enough?
Of course she's smart enough, Brian. Behave yourself.
The last two...
Well, never you mind, child. I'm sure Miss Mary is smart enough.
If she's so smart, what's she doing here?
Mrs. Marley, may we please speak privately?
Of course. Brian, that will be all.
No, it's not, my mother, dear. And do stop fidgeting, won't you? It is desperately annoying and very old hat, as Father might say were he here, which is rarely. Right, Mumsy?
Carl, please.
Master Brian.
But brush up on your book learning, Miss Drake. We'll have a go.
He tosses something into Mary's lap.
Thank you.
Unwrapping the silk handkerchief, she discovers a dead mouse inside.
How could you? Carl, please take that dead thing away.
Come along, Master Brian.
Mary seems to be suppressing a smile as Carl ushers Brian out. The young man smirks and gives a dismissive wave as he leaves.
I accept the position, Mrs. Marley.
You accept?
Mary smiles and nods. Mrs. Marley looks incredulous.
I'll let my husband know.
She smiles tearfully. Mr. Marley, stern-faced and with a military moustache, stands in his office with its oak desk bearing ornaments, military figurines, a pistol, a whiskey decanter and a half-smoked cigar in an ashtray. Behind his desk is a high-backed, well-stuffed chair.
Mary. I want him civilized. I hope you understand. I'll give you several months. If you fail, I'm sending him to military school. What was good enough for me is good enough for my troubled son. As I've told my wife, this is his last chance. Do you understand what you're to do?
I do, sir.
And I hope to God you have more success than the last poor woman that Brian drove away. Are there any further questions?
I must run the boy's life, or I can do no good.
I find that satisfactory. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
One more thing, Mary. If the boy doesn't really stammer, and he doesn't talk to his father at all.
Thank you, sir.
Mary and Mrs. Proffer leave Mr. Marley to his cigar and a magazine. A few days later, the car brings Mary back to the Marley household.
Well, here we are, ma'am.
Oh, thank you, Mr.
Carl, ma'am. You'll be meeting Melissa and Francis later on. We've all been in service with the Marleys for some time now. Francis, the cook, is my mother. And Melly is what I call my Yankee cousin.
Call me Mary, won't you, Carl?
Yes, ma'am. Miss Mary, ma'am, yes. Where would you like me to...
Just put my bags right here at the foot of the bed. I'll do the rest, Carl, thank you.
I must say, Miss Mary, you are a sight for sore eyes, and we do need you very much here.
Well, I'm sure I'll be needing you as well. Thank you, Carl.
You only have to ask, Miss Mary.
He bows uncomfortably and leaves. Mary half smiles after him. She begins to examine the quilt on her bed, unaware that Brian is watching her through a spy hole in the wall. Pulling back the quilt, she discovers several dead mice underneath. She smiles. Brian, without expression, closes the spy hole. Mary pulls a book from her travelling bag and, hugging it to her, looks around her new room. Later in her diary, she has written the date. March the 1st, 1910. Dipping her pen into an inkwell, she begins her entry. Day 1. She writes with a frown of concentration, a rubber ball held in her left hand. Later, she goes down to the kitchen.
Have you only worked with troubled children, Miss Mary?
Not more than before, it seems. You see, my husband died several years ago, so I haven't any children of my own.
Oh, you poor thing. And you have such a way with children. You should have had yourself several by now.
Oh, you're so pretty, Miss Mary. You ought to be looking around for the next man, you know?
Melissa, please. Perhaps Miss Mary's dear, late husband was the great love of her life.
My husband and I were never so blessed as you are with your Carl. So after he died, I began working with children. Actually, it's been my salvation, to bring light where there wasn't even a glimmer. I'm very blessed.
Melly and Francis smile warmly at Mary. Up in the gloomily furnished drawing room, there is a silver cake stand on the table. Mrs. Marley is taking tea with an acquaintance. The two women sit in awkward silence until Mrs. Marley's companion notices her portrait.
My, what a stunning portrait, Mrs. Marley. When was it done, may I ask?
Yes, of course, you may ask, Mrs. Colley. And please, do call me Linda.
And please, do call me Claudia.
The artist finished that mere 6 months before my son Brian was born.
Well, you haven't aged a day since then, Linda.
It's very kind of you to say so. When my son was born, he took my heart. And he took my soul.
I am so, so very sorry. I must be quite a burden. I'm so, so sorry. Poorly.
Francis checks for eavesdroppers.
Between the two of us, something went dead in her, you know. After Brian's birth, she went dead from the waist down. Doctor said she could come back at any time or be forever stilled. Oh, well, Brian has copied her fear of touching ever since he's been alive. Oh, it's all so sad. Would you hand me some greens, dearie?
Mary looks thoughtful as Francis arranges some fruit.
Was he healthy at birth?
Oh, indeed, Miss Mary. She just couldn't touch him. She said she just couldn't. She's not right. It's tragic for the child. Tragic for the father, too. I mean, she hasn't done her wifely duties since Brian's birth. Dearie, she blames Mr. Marley for her infirmity. He never touches her. Never. Everyone thinks he's a martinet. He suffers, too. Well, I think it's time for dinner, Miss Mary.
Melly holds the fine china serving dishes as first Mrs. Marley helps herself to meat and vegetables, and then, seated at the opposite end of the table, Mr. Marley does likewise, but takes only a very little food. Mary looks with interest at Brian as he is served next. Brian looks at no one. Mr. Marley takes a large sip from a crystal tumbler of whiskey and soda.
Have you found your room comfortable, Mary?
Oh, it's lovely, Mrs. Marley. So very warm and welcoming. Thank you.
Please let us know if you need anything.
I will. Thank you.
Mary, when do you think Brian's schooling is actually going to begin?
In about a day or so, sir. I'm organizing my study materials now.
Good. Excellent.
Mary looks steadily at Brian as the boy's dark eyes bore into her. Later, Mary is in the garden wearing her cape. She looks around nervously as if something might jump out at her from the large tangle of branches and overgrown creepers. She clutches her diary to her as she moves. She pauses, her attention caught by the turret-like rooms at the corner of the house. The curtains at the top room twitch aside, revealing Brian staring down at her.
Brian? Brian?
She peers into one of the turret rooms and sees leaves and earth on the floor. Thoughtfully, she rubs some of the soil through her fingers. She opens a door and reveals a small sliding panel, the door of a dumb waiter. Thoughtfully, she closes the door and peers out of the window as she moves across the room, discovering more leaves and small twigs as she goes. She looks around nervously before opening another door. The space inside is dark. She looks around frowning before finally giving a small smile and going inside. Cautiously, she closes the door behind her. She feels her way carefully up a darkened staircase. The space at the top of the stairs seems to be lined with cotton sheets. Ahead of her is a window draped with a net curtain. She moves the curtain aside and realizes it is the same window that she just recently saw Brian looking out of. Going back downstairs to the room she just left, she finds a bookcase. She looks at some of the leather-bound books on the shelf before the toys on the top of the unit catch her attention. A painted wooden clown swinging on a pair of miniature parallel bars. A painted paper puppet of a jester playing a fiddle. A carved wooden cat sitting with its jointed legs dangling over the edge of the bookshelf. She examines a book lying open on a small writing desk next to a crumpled piece of paper and a pencil. Hanging above the desk are two more painted paper puppets that she touches gently. Mr. and Mrs. Marley are down in the drawing room.
I'm sorry to be late.
It's all right, Mary. Two sugars, is it?
Yes, thank you.
All right.
Mary looks nervously at the two austere people before her and chooses her words carefully.
Mrs. Marley, where does Brian go each afternoon?
Well, I honestly don't know. I mean, that was the time he used to spend with his gram. I think he probably just goes off and plays by himself. I know he doesn't leave the house.
I shall want to teach Brian then prior to the time he spent with his grandmother.
Whatever you think necessary, Mary.
Thank you.
It is dinner time once again, and as usual, the Marleys sit in silence. Melly in attendance. Mr. Marler sipping from his whiskey and soda. A light shines out from the lower turret room, catching blossom on a tree in a garden.
It's the only place he's himself, Miss Mary. He plays his games here, has his life. I dare say he makes his own world here, like he did with his gran. God rest her poor Dotty old soul.
What was wrong with his grandmother, Carl?
Well, Brian's gram came to live here when Mrs. Marley's father passed away. She was an intelligent woman, but, she wasn't quite right in the head. She had a marvelous way with Brian. Even when she went dotty beyond all hope, she had this world with him.
She finds a magic lantern and switches it on, making Carl blink.
He's lost without her, I'm afraid.
But he speaks to his mother.
That's only to get by in the house, I'm afraid, Miss Mary. His mother blames him for the way she is. She can't touch him, you know. There's no lack of bitterness there, I'm afraid.
Clutching a toy sword, she sits in a structure made of old furniture and covered with sheets and drapes.
That's Brian's house you're in.
Starting guiltily and putting down the sword, she levers herself out of the makeshift playhouse. The next day, she is arranging the schoolroom for lessons. She arranges a pile of books just so, and smiles to herself as she opens and closes one particular volume. The whole time, she is being watched by Brian from his hidey hole in the dumb waiter. As Mary is out of the room, Brian emerges from his hiding place and closes the main door behind him. He moves swiftly across the room and sits at a chair by the table. He picks up a painted cup and ball puzzle and begins to expertly flick the little wooden ball on its string into the wooden receptacle in his outstretched hand.
Brian, there you are! Just now I was right outside your door. Were you hiding?
Of course not. No.
Let's begin by finding out where you are in your education. We'll start with a few simple numbers. 2 plus 2.
4.
4 plus 4.
8.
8 plus 8.
16, 32, 64, 128, 256, 512, 1024. May we multiply now?
All right. 2 times 2.
4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18.
Brian!
Yes, ma'am?
Miss Mary will do Brian.
Divide now?
What are you doing?
Hating you.
I can see that.
There's hope for you then.
Of course there is. Just as there is hope for that tragic stammer of yours, Master Brian.
What stammer?
We can dispense with the stammer then, can't we, Brian?
She raps on the table to get his attention, and he reluctantly hands his game over to her. She pushes a large book towards him and motions for him to open it.
Well?
Inside the hollow book lies a dead mouse.
You tricked me!
Sit down, young man. Shall I force you, or shall I have Carl come in?
He sits back down abruptly.
Thank you. Now, I am simply returning to you what is already yours, as is right and good, is it not? By the way, young man, one of the next things we'll study is how this particular rodent died and in what kind of agony. Fascinating, don't you think? Now, do you wish to put these in jars for later study?
No.
Well then, young man, do not leave them for me to find, or you will know more about the life of the rodent population indigenous to this area of the world than you ever thought possible. Deal?
Deal.
Later, Mary creeps up to Brian's secret den and peers through the keyhole.
The tiny wild girl sat halfway up the tall tree and looked down at it. I could see her beautiful reflection in the pool by my two white horses. No one shall sully your honor. Not while I live or breathe, fair lady.
What a perfect little thing she is, Gran. Will I ever see you again, Gran? Gran. Will I ever see you again?
Mary stares in wonder as, having put down his puppet of a small blonde fairy, the boy falls asleep clutching a little toy horse.
Brian?
Ryan, time for dinner. Come along, Master Brian. All right. This foot first. There we go. Now your hands. Up you get. There's a good lad. Here are the hands. Up, 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 up. Come along. Ooh.
Thank you, Carl.
Come along, lad. Let's get the downstairs.
Mary's diary entry for March the 11th, 1910 reads, "Dinner appears a painful ritual for the family." Holding her rubber ball against her cheek, she considers what to write next. The next day in the schoolroom, a rubber ball is rolled backwards and forwards across the table.
There's going to be a quiz soon. I shan't tell you when, but I suggest that you prepare for it with all your attention. Gift, noun. Talent. Ability. Aptitude. Facility. Strength. Forte. Power. Also, present. Donation. Benefaction. Charity. Offering. And historically, alms. Now, what word might that be again?
Gift.
Good. Now in a sentence. Brian Marley has a very special gift. Over the next few days, we'll learn several words and what those words mean or can mean, and then we'll use them in sentences.
Oh, joy. Vocabulary.
It is much more than just mere vocabulary, young man. I suggest you attend to it.
Vocabulary is just words.
Wrong. Vocabulary is how you see your entire world.
As the wind swirls outside, up in the playhouse room, a set of older women's clothes hangs on a stand, topped by a straw bonnet with flowers on.
Graham? Is it safe to go out, Graham? Can we play now? Graham? I thought you'd agree, Graham.
Down in his gaslit room, sitting at a chessboard, Carl opens a letter.
Ah, dearest Carl, sincerely regret the silence that has acidly lapped around us. Yet I pray surely not undermine our sibling amite. Please find enclosed devastating death blow. Queen to pawn 2, your move pasha.
Carl leans across the board and makes his move, then settles back and clamps his pipe between his teeth. Down in her room, Mary is writing furiously in her diary, watched all the time by Brian, peering out from his hidey hole in the dumb waiter. She writes a heading, Brian's Grandma. As she continues to write quickly, Brian closes the peephole.
Genteel.
Adjective. Affectedly or ostentatiously refined or stylish. Of or appropriate to the upper classes. Blue-blooded, urbane, courtly, polite, civil, well-mannered. Over-polite. Over-refined. Pretentious. Affected. Pompous. Snobbish. Posh. Toffee-nosed.
Brian!
Sentence! My very silly, pompous, snobbish mother. Stupid, sniveling, weakling of a mother.
who married Graham's son for his money, money, money.
Ryan!
Yes? Your mother is keeping your father from sending you to military school. Never forget that.
You're just a servant! And you have no right to speak to me that way, not ever! I shall tell my mother on you.
Be my guest.
In his playroom, Brian is staring fixedly at the puppet of the little curly-haired fairy.
I wasn't sure I understood. But I thought I got something. So I sniffed my hand. And I put it over my heart. I stroked it very gently like a little kitten. And I put my face into a question. You can tell I won't hurt you. By smelling me? She smiled and sighed.
Brian! Dinner's ready. Brian, are you there?
No. I'm nowhere. I'm nowhere. We're food. We're food for the giants.
Mary closes the peephole through which she has been spying on Brian. Later, the family sit at dinner, as usual, in silence. Mary starts another entry in her diary dated March the 26th, 1910.
Consume. Verb. Transitive.
Brian spins a small painted top on the desk in front of him. He stares fixedly at Mary.
Gobble.
Brian spins the top again, but picks it up before it stops spinning.
Ruin. Demolish. Devastate. Wreck. Ravage.
Brian spins the top again, harder this time.
Overcome. Overwhelm. Obsessed. Absorbed. Your turn.
Sentence. I consume my dinner. I am consumed with dislike for you. I will be consumed by the giants.
You will? What giants?
I don't know. I made that part up.
What else do you make up, Brian?
Sentences for schoolwork. I make up sentences, that's all.
Brian spins the top gently now.
All right. School is over early today.
Did I not do well?
You did very well, except for your manners.
As Mary leaves, Brian looks chastened. The top is spinning on the desk in front of him.
I'm scared. I'm scared. I don't like you here without you, Graham. I don't like you here without you, Graham. Oh, come on, come on.
Brian, who has been clutching at the set of his grandma's clothes, suddenly flings himself across the room. He lies on a cushion and tries to bury his head under a child's wooden chair. He draws his knees up to his chest.
Dinner! Master Brian is dinner.
Carl stops short, noticing that Brian isn't in his playhouse as usual.
There you are, Master Brian. Come on. Out you come. Come along. Give me your hands. Come on. Come on, sir. Come on, Master Brian. Up you get. I know.
up you get. Oh, you want to be carried over. Oh, you're gone, my word. You are getting heavy in your old age, aren't you? All right, come along.
Mary's diary entry reads April the 6th, 1910. The next day, the front door of the house opens and Mary comes in. She's wearing a hat and travelling cape and has a book tied with string and wrapped with brown paper under her arm. She looks around the hallway as she enters. Later, she and Brian are in the schoolroom.
Well?
I'm thinking.
How very smart of you.
All right. Hate. Verb. Loathe. Abhor. Detest. Have an aversion to. Abominate. Execrate. Despise. Scorn. Dislike. Shrink from. Be averse to. Resist. Be loath to. Be reluctant, or unwilling, or disinclined to. Noun. Hatred. Abhorrence. Detestation. Hostility. Aversion. Enemy. Bête noire.
In a sentence, please.
I hate you.
You're smarter than that.
I hate everything about you. I hate the way you smell, the way you walk, talk, your very existence. You're abhorrent, an abomination, and I detest you to your face. I scorn you in my dreams, execrate you in my prayers, and shrink from you in my fantasies.
Now that is a grand, complex sentence. But I know for a fact that you do much more interesting things with your time. Next, please.
Real. Adjective. Genuine, actual, true, existent, authentic, natural, proper, heartfelt, unfeigned, earnest, honest.
In a sentence, please.
If I could escape from this real world, I'd do so in an instant.
But you do, Brian. You do.
Brian looks uncomfortable and averts his gaze from her. Later, the table is laid for dinner.
I was just coming to get you, Mrs. Marley. Don't we look wonderful this evening? I'll oil that wheel for you as soon as I can, Mrs. Marley.
Thank you, Carl. But you needn't flatter me. There's no one for me to look pretty for anymore.
Well, there are two gentlemen expected for dinner this evening. There's a fine, upstanding gentleman by the name of Mr. Douglas Marley, and a rather smart youngster who goes by the name of Master Brian. Will that do?
Yes, Carl. It will have to.
He leaves her sitting forlornly in her wheelchair in her fine dress at the end of the large dining table. Later at dinner, Mr. Marley gulps down his whiskey and soda from his crystal tumbler.
Millie, another one of these, please. So how's school, son?
Mary looks pointedly at Brian, who stares down at his plate.
I assume somebody's going to tell me something someday. I hope. I think.
This is delicious, Mrs. Marley.
Thank you, Mary. I'll be sure and tell Francis.
I want to know when he knows something about banking. When he knows about the Civil War and the capitals of Europe. And most of all, when he doesn't shrink from his own father. I hope you ladies will excuse me. I'll be in my study. I'm not very good company tonight. Bring some of this bird and some bread. Good night.
Mrs. Marley looks close to tears as her husband leaves the room. Later in her room, Mary writes her diary. The date is April the 23rd. She writes quickly, her brow furrowed in concentration. Downstairs, Mrs. Marley sits alone in her chair in the drawing room, staring at the painting of her in her fine dress and a parasol on a sunny day. Outside, the lightning flashes as a storm moves in. Mary crawls under the bed with Brian and begins to scream with him. Mrs. Marley listens outside the door.
Bed. Now explain yourself, please.
He stopped screaming, Mrs. Marley.
I beg your pardon.
Carl told me that during the storms he doesn't stop screaming. He stopped screaming.
His grandmother died on such a night. He screams. When the thunder stops, he stops.
But you see, Mrs. Marley, I joined him in his fear. That's the key, really, joining a troubled child in the midst of his worst times. That way he can stop being afraid and can join the world. Or at least he can try. I've been successful with this in the past, and I know I can make a great difference with Brian if you would only please support me.
All right, Mary. But I do not want to hear that you've been found sleeping near my son's bedroom again.
Mary shakes her head and smiles apologetically. Carl is in his room.
Dear Victor, the first will be last and the last shall be first. Hubris has always been your downfall. Now all that remains is the final blow. Yours, Carl.
He leans forwards and moves a chess piece decisively. In her room, Mary is making another diary entry. The date is April the 26th. She writes carelessly, rushing the pen across the pages. Having stabbed a full stop into the paper, she leans across and returns her pen to a little velvet-lined box on a small table beside her. From a small square of paper, she taps some grains of powder into a glass of water. All the time, she's being watched by Brian from his hiding place in the dumbwaiter. As Mary drinks from the glass, Brian quietly slides the door of his hidey hole closed. The next day in the schoolroom, the painted wooden clown on the parallel bars is sitting on the table between Brian and Mary. Brian gives the clown a spin.
Well?
Love. Noun. Cherish, admire, adore. Lose one's heart to. Treasure, think the world of. May I just go to a sentence now?
Yes, you may.
I love my grandmother very much.
Past tense, Brian.
I loved my grandmother very much.
The difference?
I love my grandmother today, and I loved her yesterday.
More accurately, Brian, I love her now, and I loved her before she died.
Brian's eyes blaze.
My gram's not dead. My Gram's just gone away. My Gram's coming back to get me. She'd never leave me alone with the giants. She's coming back for me. She is. She promised me.
Gram promised me. Melly, I have to watch this. I have to watch this. I have to watch. I have to watch.
Mary stands rigid, her arms raised in shock as Brian subsides to the floor and curls up. Worried and uncertain, she kneels down next to the traumatized boy and gingerly begins to stroke his cheek and stroke his hair. Brian responds. He grasps her hand. She tenderly kisses his other hand and places his head in her lap. Suddenly, Brian opens his eyes and, focusing on Mary, shrieks, leaps to his feet and bolts from the room. Shortly, he is up in his playhouse, staring fixedly in front of him with a toy sword in his hand as Mary enters. She crawls around the playhouse and is startled as the sword is thrust out towards her.
This is my place! You can't be here! You're not allowed here!
She places a finger to her lips and smiles awkwardly. Looking around, she finds a small wooden chair that she places in front of Brian's house. Uncertainly, and with some discomfort, she maneuvers herself into the small chair, all the while gesturing to Brian that she's not going to do anything bad. They sit in awkward silence, neither knowing quite what to do next.
Your grandmother died several months ago, Brian. She never abandoned you. She can't come back, Brian. She never meant to hurt you. And she did not abandon you, Brian.
No, I want my gram.
She died. Like we all do one day.
I want my gram.
Shall I bring us some milk and cookies?
Brian hangs his head.
Yes. You'll be right here when I come back.
Brian nods weakly, and Mary smiles at him reassuringly as she goes to fetch their snack. A short while later, Brian finishes his milk and hands the empty glass to Mary, who places it along with her own and an empty plate on the floor. She looks around, wondering how to proceed, and knocks on the window of his playhouse.
What's this?
My house.
What do you do in your house?
Be happy. Make up stories sometimes.
Can I be happy with you?
You won't touch my things?
No. They're yours.
Promise?
Cross my heart. What's this?
That's the Marley Express. Leaves promptly at 3 each afternoon and arrives at Brian's house very quickly. It's a world of twos, you see? It's a day side, right there. It's the sun. And there's a night side, the moon. The night side is usually safer than the day side.
Well, that's the opposite of what most people believe, don't you think?
Not when the giants prowl by day.
Good point. Well, sir, shall we dress for dinner?
Not yet. Sorry.
Of course.
They grin at each other, and Brian makes a playful lunge at her with the sword. Later, Brian is reading by candlelight.
Sympathy. Noun. Compassion. Pity. Concern. Tenderness. Understanding. Warm-heartedness, condolences. Like the people who sent those cards and flowers when my gram left?
When your Gram...
died or passed away.
Exactly like those letters of condolence.
Compassion. Commiseration. Pity. Like when my father is always so harsh and my mother cries and is so scared, I should know it's not my fault.
Exactly.
Agreement, harmony, compatibility, as in my teacher feeling sympathy for my plight.
Now, where did you hear plight?
One of my mother's bedside romance books.
You go to your mother's room?
Of course. Every night I check on everyone before I go to sleep.
Without anyone seeing?
Yes.
How?
The dumbwaiter, silly.
The date in Mary's diary is now May the 10th, 1910. Mary is walking in the overgrown garden. She's carrying a book and wearing a straw bonnet and cape over her shoulders. Brian, in a flat cap and tweed jacket, is watching her. Smiling mischievously, he begins to lob pine cones at her. She darts through the tangled bushes to avoid being hit. Emerging from the bushes, she begins to bat the pine cones to one side with the book. Brian frowns. He hadn't counted on that reaction. As she bends down to pick up a pinecone and throw it back, he darts off to hide. Tapping the pinecone with the book, Mary moves off to take up the challenge and begin searching for him. Brian opens a small concealed wooden door built into the base of the house and slips inside. Mary, having walked all round the house and not found him, shrugs in exasperation and looks up at the top turret room. Sure enough, there is Brian waving down at her with mock gentility. Shortly, he comes down and shows Mary the secret door. He also shows her some of the rat traps hidden in the bushes. With an impish look, he tries to frighten her by pretending to catch her nose in a trap. They walk off smiling, Mary playfully hitting Brian on the arm with her book.
Go to the right side, where the day moon is. Or you can go to the left side, where the night moon is. Or you can stay at the little inn in between. Much smarter thing to do. And then you can go whichever way you want the next night when the two moons come out to light, whichever way you wish to go.
When did you learn all this?
My grandma and I built it together. Can't remember when. I'm much too young to have a past. I miss my gram.
Who's this?
Oh, that's easy. And here's Pine Ball. They're twins. They're twin brothers. They're twins.
He looks at the two toy ponies.
My gram gave me my magical horses before she died. She said they would guard my safety. Nobody knows I have them.
They're beautiful, Brian.
Please don't tell my secrets.
I promise, never.
Would you like to see how I built the tracks inside the walls?
Absolutely.
Well, let me sit easy down and Pine Ball. Okay.
Oh, it's dark. You know where you're going. You leave.
He beckons to her.
May I touch your back to lead me through the darkness?
Oh, why no, miss. It's best if I take your hand.
Are you sure?
Well, you are my friend, aren't you?
Yes.
Watch your head. Come on.
Mary places her hands on Brian's back, and he leads her into the small space in the wall of the playroom. The toy train comes to life and emerges from the moon side of Brian's model, making its journey towards the sunny side. Later, as dinner is being prepared, Brian steps into the kitchen and kisses Francis on the cheek.
A treat for the sweet Francine. Oh. What's the sweet tonight?
Well, what would Master Brian like? We have lovely chocolate cake.
Oh, lovely.
Or some fresh fruit that Carl brought back from the market today. Or a lovely custard that I taught Millie how to make.
Francie, may we have it all?
Ladies, I think Master Brian has just solved the age-old problem of having your cake and eating it too. What do you say?
I say righty-tighty-tum.
Oh, I have to go eat now. Thank you, Francie.
Oh.
Striding into the dining room where his mother and father are already seated, Brian gallantly pulls out Mary's chair for her and stands in attendance whilst helping her to settle. He then walks with great formality around to his side of the table and very properly pulls out his chair and settles himself in it. He looks around at everyone at the table, smiling.
Good evening, Mother. Father.
Good evening, son. I'm most pleasantly surprised, Mary.
Thank you, sir. It is a beginning. Brian is also happy with our work.
It's far more than a beginning. What studies do you favor, son?
Well, Mary has told me I excel in history, vocabulary, and mathematics, sir.
Might we have a little display of mathematics this evening?
2 times 2 is 4, 2 times 3 is 6, 2 times 4 is 8, 2 times 5 is 10, 2 times 6 is 12, 2 times 7 is 14, 2 times 8 is 16, 2 times 10 is 20.
Mary smiles. Mrs. Marley looks tearful.
Very good.
For the first time since Mary started her employment there, there are smiles around the Marley dinner table. Later that evening, Mr. Marley, in his dressing gown, approaches his wife.
My dear, I would like to come to you tonight, if I may.
Visibly shaken, Mrs. Marley wheels herself away from him. Brian is making his rounds. Peering out of his hidey hole, he sees his mother sobbing into a handkerchief.
Yes. Yes.
Mr. Marley enters his wife's room and walks slowly up behind her wheelchair. She smiles weakly, stifling a sob, and clasps her hands together.
At least we made one child successfully.
Yes.
You've done some things different in here, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
It's quite nice. You see, I don't miss everything.
No, you don't.
No. Shall we play? Or shall we play? Exquisite. What a pity. I thought it might be different this time. What happened, my dear?
Everything.
Mr. Marley leaves the room, closing the door behind him. His wife remains sitting in her wheelchair, crying gently. Brian, who has watched the whole exchange, gingerly closes the sliding door of his hidey hole and grasps the rope that will allow him to move the dumbwaiter to another room. Mary is sitting in her writing chair, holding her diary to her chest. She touches her forehead as if she has a headache.
Who is it?
Brian.
Open up, Brian.
Something's wrong with my parents, Mary.
They're not injured, are they?
No. But my father's really angry and my mother is frightened.
Sorry to hear that, Brian. There's nothing we can do except be the best that we can be. And that means getting enough sleep. Sweet dreams, Brian.
Sweet dreams.
Once upon a time, there was a boy. No, it's not you, so stop smiling. Now, this is a serious story. Once upon a time, there was a boy who had lots and lots and lots of toys that he treasured beyond measure. Well, one day, this boy was taken to the fair by his very kind and generous parents.
Now, while this very charming and handsome boy was having a wondrous time at the fair with his very kind and generous parents, a thief broke into their house and stole all the boy's toys, each and every one of them. Now, when the boy and his parents returned home from the fair, and they found no toys at all, the boy, he cried and he cried and he cried and he cried until their simple servant said, "Aha!" as she looked out the window. Well, of course, everyone runs over to the window to see what's so wondrous outside. Well, there are the flowers in the garden, and there's the big, beautiful moon in the sky. "Well, there's nothing out here at all," said the gruff father, rebuking their simple servant. Well, she said, the thief may have gotten away with all the toys, but he forgot to take the big, beautiful full moon in the sky. Moral?
I'm thinking. Nothing you could ever buy can match the wonderful wonders of the world that God gave us.
Or?
Do not place undue importance on mere objects when Mother Nature has provided ample joys to transport the spirit of man.
Well, there you see. I am completely out of your league. I might as well pack up my tent and skulk out of town.
Brian gives a broad, self-satisfied grin. Shortly, they are up in the playroom.
I can't give up my house just yet, Mary. Not yet.
Of course not, Brian. There's no rush at all. When you can, you will.
I didn't think about my gram today. I thought about you instead. Is that bad?
Tomorrow you'll think about your schoolwork. And the next day you'll think about buying a little gift for your mother that will make her smile. And the day after that you might give your father something that you made by hand. What do you think about that?
And the day after that, I'll buy a very special gift for Mary, to at least thank her for...
Oops, split your infinitive.
To thank my very special teacher, without whom I would still be in my imaginary world of my childhood.
I am so very proud of you.
I am too.
He smiles warmly and, standing, extends his hand to her.
Brian, Miss Mary, everyone's at table.
With great affection, Brian kisses the back of Mary's hand before raising it up and placing her palm on his cheek. He lets it linger there for a short while before smiling and helping her to her feet. Down at the dinner table, Mr. Marley drains his whiskey and soda and looks daggers at his wife across the table. Brian and Mary glance at each other and shift uncomfortably. Mrs. Marley looks very upset.
Tonight, son, might we have a little display of vocabulary?
Teacher, noun. Educator, instructor, master, mistress, mentor, governess, guide. Schoolmaster, counselor, guide.
No. You said guide once already. Otherwise, I'm most pleased with the progress he's made. I think he's ready to be a recruit at the cadet corps.
Douglas, do not hurt your son. You gave me your word.
I'll have a general, or a banker, or a lawyer for a son. I'm not gonna have a weakling hiding under the label of genius. I didn't spend my life building this empire to turn it over to a genius.
But
Keep up the good work, son. You have a fine year ahead of you at your father's alma mater.
Concern is etched on Mary's face as the panic rises in Brian. Eyes wide and terrified, the boy bolts from the table and seeks refuge in his playhouse. Tears staining his cheeks, Brian sits in his house and Mary kneels just outside.
Is this hell?
Yes, Brian, it is.
Utterly panic-stricken, Brian launches himself out of his house and crawls across the floor to place his head underneath the wooden child's chair. He lies there, curled up as Mary remains in the same position, kneeling perfectly still, looking at the floor. Downstairs, Mrs. Marley is sitting in her wheelchair, a shawl draped around her shoulders, crying. Later, Mary is writing in her diary. She looks dejected and is writing without great care. She slumps back in her chair as lightning flashes. Brian is lying under his bed, his hands held to his ears. Worried that Mary hasn't responded, Brian crawls out from under the bed, picks himself up and runs into her room. She is slumped in her chair and seems to be in a deep sleep, her pen hanging loosely in her fingers. Brian edges towards her and gently touches her hand, lifting her fingers one by one. She remains unmoving, unresponsive. He leans forward and gently kisses her fingertips. Then, as the thunder rolls, in a panic, he flings his arm around her legs and places his head on her knees. She wakes up. Brian leaps up into her lap, flinging his arms around her neck. As Mary tries to soothe away his fear, the figure of Mrs. Marley in her wheelchair watches them, wide-eyed from the doorway.
That was the last time we saw Brian's house. For we bravely left our childhood home. We grew up to be a fine, strapping young lad. Figures, geography, and history, and who always knew that his very best friend and teacher was just a small room away.
Please don't let me go.
As Mary gradually manages to soothe the terrified boy, kissing him, holding him tightly and rocking him in the chair, his mother can only stare mutely from the doorway. Shortly, Mary escorts Brian back to bed.
Come on.
sweet prince.
As Brian stretches and with a serene look on his features, finally slips peacefully to sleep, a car arrives outside the house. Unable to hear it, Brian sleeps on. As Mary is dragged from the house, Brian lunges for his secret passageway. Brian climbs the stairs. Mr. Marley looks down from his window. Brian, who has been desperately hammering on the turret room window, suddenly falls bodily through it, landing in a shower of glass on the wet grass below. He looks up into Mary's eyes.
I came back. I love you, Mary. I love you, sir.
Mary desperately cradles Brian's head in her arms, her hands now wet with his blood. As she tries to help him, Mrs. Marley can only sit in her lonely wheelchair, staring mournfully into the middle distance. Mary continues to try and soothe Brian as his breathing becomes more labored. His eyes become glassy, and his body begins to stiffen. A figure in white is reflected in a dark pool of water. The end.
Listen to the sound, a hushed little voice that no one hears.